Oh, right. I have to start talking? I forgot. It's
been a while.
It has been a while. I'm sorry. The dog is going to sit on this microphone. It's going to be great. Anyway, yeah. So, it's been, okay, probably like six more, probably more than that. I don't know. July? August, September, and I told you this is not going to work. There's a dog on the bed, and we're sitting on our bed because we like to record podcasts in bed. Because
we opened up our fortune. He said, "You like to record podcasts?" Yeah, I said,
"In bed." And here we are. That's why it's called Killer Pillow Talk. Okay, wait.
We're literally talking on pillows.
Yes.
Suzanne, are you done moving?
Susan's never done moving. She's getting comfortable.
Yeah, Susan, get comfortable. This is a long story.
So we were halfway through about in the kindly killer.
We were not half
about
halfway
through. It's not my fault this guy like spent all this time murdering people.
About 45%.
I don't think he had any other hobbies. Ugh.
And listen, when you know something, when you find something you like to do, as long as not hurting somebody, that's.
I think that's exactly what this guy's doing.
That's where this goes wrong.
It's very bad. Okay. Anyway, Scooby Dooby Doo. Okay, so Dennis Nilsson, Scottish guy, was in the army.
This is a recap.
Gay, is what basically you need to know. Grandfather died, and when he saw his corpse, he was like, "Ooh, that's fun."
Exciting.
Yeah. Moved to London, became a cop, then decided, nah, this isn't for me, and then started working at the unemployment office in London. And
is that ironic, working at the unemployment office?
Well, I think he just, like, helps people find jobs or whatever. Hmm. Yeah.
Even dealing with unemployment is a job.
It is.
And we know that this year, am I right?
When I say this, okay.
And I'll put my hand.
All right. Okay.
Oh, wait, have you finished Riga?
Yeah.
They can listen to the old one.
Sorry. Listen to the old one.
Please.
That's basically what happened.
Listen.
He lived in his old apartment was at blah, 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 somewhere. He lives in an apartment, in a basement apartment, and he used to kill people and keep them under his floorboards.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would burn the body parts. But he had to move from out of his apartment because his landlord was renovating and wanted to give him £1,000. Sorry, not dollars.
That's where we've left off.
And that's where we left off was after
so he's
he moves.
About to move.
He's moved out of his old apartment, and in his new apartment in Cranley Gardens, in Muswell Hill, it's where
so
he
this
gets
this is the new stuff.
This is this where he gets the name the Muswell Muswell Hill. Murderer.
Or as he called it, the Muskillwell. No.
Okay.
Okay. Well.
Alright. So he has his new apartment, and he didn't have access to a garden here like he did in his last place, so he didn't have anywhere to burn the bodies. And he didn't have, like I said, he lived in the upstairs, like, top floor apartment, so he couldn't keep people under his floorboards anymore.
They'd be in the apartment below.
Yeah. See, he didn't have, like, that extra stowaway space.
Uh-huh.
So as a result of that, he went about 2 months without killing anybody.
Well, listen, have you ever moved? You don't have much energy in those first 2 months.
Yeah,
you're gonna want to lay low.
Well, he did attempt to strangle
furniture. Oh, what?
He attempted to strangle a 19-year-old student, Paul Nobbs, on November 23rd, 1981.
Ooh, that just happened.
But he stopped himself because he was like, "Oh, I don't have anywhere to put the body, so I can't keep this." All
right, you're free to go.
It's like, you know, when you move somewhere and then you're like,
"But where am I gonna put it?"
You want to buy new stuff, but you're like, "Where am I gonna put it?" It's kind of like
the
that.
Old stuff. I got these old bodies. I gotta put somewhere.
No, he didn't take any of those with him.
No.
He burned all of them.
That's in our last episode.
Yeah, but yeah, so he was gonna kill this kid, Paul, and then he was like, "Nah, I'm gonna let him go," which is good, yay.
Yeah.
In March 1982, Nilsson met 23-year-old John Howlett at a pub in Leicester Square. Invited him back to his apartment, la-di-da, you know. And then John went into the front room and fell asleep on Dennis's bed. Bad idea. An hour later, when Dennis couldn't wake John up, he sat on the edge of the bed, drinking rum, and decided, what the hell, I'm gonna kill him.
What the hell, I got nothing else to do. This guy's asleep.
So the two got into
Is this a thing, like, would the... Yeah, go back to a person's apartment, and, like, you hang out there for a while, and then you end up falling asleep just on... Without them, he wasn't in the room, right?
I don't know.
Paul just wandered off and said, I'm gonna conk out here.
I think generally Dennis invites these people back to his house and then gets them really drunk, and then they kind of pass out somewhere.
Well, we passed out somewhere.
That's, I think, what happens. Because it seems to be like a running theme. Like, he invites a guy over to be like, I got booze in my house, let's get drunk.
Cost whatever pounds this one does.
Then he gets them drunk and then they pass out.
I don't like this guy.
I know, he's a bad guy. I'm not saying that he isn't. So John falls asleep on the bed, and Dennis is like, hey, I'm gonna kill you. The two got into a ferocious struggle, and John woke up.
That's because he said, hey, I'm gonna... He exclaimed out loud, hey, I'm gonna kill you.
But John didn't hear that. John woke up, and he's like, Dennis turned things around and then tried to strangle Dennis, who finally got the upper hand and then strangled John with an upholstery strap until he passed out. After this, Dennis came into the living room and he's shaking from stress due to the struggle. He then unsuccessfully tried
to... Oh, yeah, because he's stressed.
He unsuccessfully tried to kill John three more times before deciding to drown him in the bathtub.
Which he's good at.
Yeah, this is like, he tried to strangle him three times, didn't work. And then, so he drowned him in the bathtub, and John's finger impressions were on Dennis's neck for about a week. Because when John tried to strangle him, he had, like, ligature marks on his neck.
Hey, is that a hickey? No, it's a ring finger.
It's not a hickey, it's some man tried to strangle me.
What were you doing to him? Strangling him first, but...
It was self-defense.
It was, his was self-defense. Mine was...
Then he started strangling me, and then I was like, well, now I have justified in strangling him back.
Now I got a reason.
In May 1982, Nilsson met Carl Stotter, a 21-year-old gay man, who was drinking at the Black Cat Pub in Camden. And, you know, Dennis and Carl got to chatting.
Here we have the fat black cat. What's it called?
The Black Cat.
That's the London one?
No, this is the Black Cap Pub.
Oh, cap.
Cap, like a hat.
I'm thinking a fat cat here.
Are you done? I'm gonna keep interrupting me while to talk.
Isn't that how we do it?
Sure. Welcome to America, where women don't get to talk.
No, welcome to this podcast, where this is what we do.
Okay. Hashtag feminism.
Hey, we're both talking.
Okay. Alright, so Dennis is chatting up Carl. And Carl's pretty depressed because he broke up with his, I guess, boyfriend, girlfriend? I don't know, it doesn't say. I assume
Carl's gay.
I'm not judging, I'm not saying that Carl definitely is gay, but I mean, that's generally the type that Dennis goes for.
I'll make the educated guess.
But they had a breakup and Paul and buy you more drinks and then invited Carl back to his flat. But he kept saying, oh, I'm not interested in having sex with you. I just want to, like, you know,
lay down,
have some company.
Hey, what's this other guy doing?
Back to good old Cranley Gardens, and Carol drinks some more booze and passes out on an open sleeping bag.
Where was, hold on.
I don't know why he has a sleeping bag out.
Where's the other guy when all this happened?
He's dead.
Dead where?
I don't know. Around.
Because there's no floorboards in this one.
There's no floorboards in this one. Originally, I think he, I didn't put what... I think he... Well, in this apartment, he actually starts hiding things under his, like, kitchen sink and, like...
Oh, right.
Wardrobe and, like, tea
chest. That was the old one, though, right?
Yeah, he's done that before, too.
That's where he got the idea.
So yeah, he just stuffs it in like cupboards or a closet or something. Right. Whatever, you know, just tucks it away just for safekeeping.
Don't look in the medicine cabinet!
Anyway. So then Carl wakes up and Dennis is on top of him trying to strangle him while loudly whispering, "Stay still." Ugh, creepy. And then Carl initially thought Dennis was somehow trying to free him from the sleeping bag before he passed out again and began...
You're tangled in the sleeping bag. So, don't move. The zipper's stuck.
So, yeah.
How that happened? The zipper gets stuck.
When he woke... Carl was like... I think Dennis told Carl that he was like, "Oh, you were stuck in the sleeping bag," and like... Because he doesn't...
like a caterpillar.
Yeah. So, Dennis thought... Carl thought he was getting trapped in the sleeping bag, and Dennis was trying to, like, somehow get him out, and that's why he was telling him to stay still.
Dennis is not a helpful person,
though. No. Because he was like, this is, seems logic. Why would this guy I just met be trying to kill me? Mm-hmm. And so he passed out again, because Dennis is strangling him, and then when he wakes up again, he hears sounds of running water before, and then he's...
Just drawing a bath. Don't worry about it.
Remembers being submerged in Dennis's bathtub, at which point he realized, oh, shit, this dude is trying to kill me.
Oh, this guy leaves and is alive?
I'm getting to that.
Because he remembers, I just picked up what you, I see, I listen, so.
Well, can you listen to what I'm saying for the rest of it? So Carl fights to get his head above the water and gasps, "No more, please, no more!" And then Dennis plunged Carl back into the water. And so now Dennis thinks Carl is dead. So he put the body sitting up in his armchair.
The neighbors don't hear?
I don't know. Maybe they have headphones on.
I think he's like rehearsing Shakespeare or something like
that. Yeah, maybe he's watching
no
TV.
No more.
So this
that's
is
a
when,
classic Shakespeare line.
This is when Dennis's mongrel dog Bleep. I didn't even know he had a dog. Now he has a dog, apparently. I guess he's a dog. And it's named Bleep. Jumped up
his
and...
His dog's name's Bleep?
Yeah. Hmm. Jumped up and started licking...
His goldfish? Bloop.
Stop it! Jumped up and started licking Carl's face and rubbing... He just started licking Carl's face. So then Dennis is like, oh, wait, he's not dead. So then... In an effort...
He wouldn't... Wait a minute. Bleep wouldn't be licking a dead guy.
Well, I think he probably saw him move or something.
What the
react. Bleep? He probably saw him move or react or some way in some way.
Because nobody can resist Bleep's little tongue.
So then he starts rubbing Carl's limbs and heart to increase blood circulation.
Gotta get that pumping again.
Because you gotta do that. And then he covers Carl in blankets and put him on his bed. On Dennis's bed. Dennis puts Carl on his bed.
I was looking mighty cold, so.
Carl eventually regains consciousness, and Dennis hugs him and says that he saved Carl from the most almost strangling himself on the zipper of the sleeping bag. And Dennis
was like, "The shit I did, you were throwing me in the tub."
And Dennis was like, "No, you were stuck in the sleeping bag, and I saved you, and then I brought you back to life."
The shit you did, I was face first down in that fucking bathtub.
So Carl's
I'm getting the Bleep out of here.
Carl's
takes the dog.
Yeah, obviously he would want to get out of there, but he's over the next. He's still weak, so over the next few days he like slips in and out of consciousness. And when he finally gets enough strength, he's like, "Why were you trying to strangle me and drown me earlier, Dennis?" And Dennis was like, "Oh, that was a nightmare you had, and you got stuck in that sleeping bag, and went into shock, and then
you sweat,
and then I decided to wake you up by putting you in a bunch of cold water, and then, you know."
I dried your clothes off because you were you were soaked, man.
I wanted to give you a bath because you were sweaty.
You were soaked.
So, yeah, Dennis ends up releasing Carl, and Carl gets dropped off at a nearby train station. And Dennis is like, "I hope we'll meet again, you know, like, hang out."
All right, we'll come by anytime. Door's always open. Sorry you were stuck here for a week.
Yeah. It's weird.
Am I doing a perfect British accent?
That's not how British people sound at all.
Sorry you were stuck here.
Anyway. Yeah, so that one didn't work out. It was the one that got away.
That one actually did work out because nobody died.
It worked out for Carl.
That's whose side I'm on. I'm not on this Nilsen guy's side.
I know. Poor Carl. So in June of 1980...
Poor Carl. Is that a shirt?
I don't know. It could be. So June 1982 rolls around. Dennis gets promoted to executive officer in the employment office. The employment office. So it's not unemployment, but I guess it's like...
Oh, the employment office.
Yeah, so he works...
Because to get a promotion out of the unemployment
office? No, I think it's... He works in an office where he helps people get jobs. That's irony. You know what I mean. And so 3 months after his promotion, he meets 27-year-old Graham Allen, who is attempting to hail a taxi.
I love Graham Allen's British talk, so it's so fun. I'm thinking of Graham Norton. That's...
Sure.
That's right.
Okay. So he invites Graham over for a meal at his new flat.
Now, but by this point, well, I guess it's still... I've known people who moved in 5 years ago. Like, this is my new place. Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. You always know those people are like, we moved. When did you move in? Yeah, 6 years ago. It's our new place. Yeah.
It's not 6 years ago. He moved in.
No, I know. He's months.
May or something. I don't know.
Months new at this point.
He's less than 6 months.
I got you.
Okay. Let's stop getting caught up on semantics.
Okay.
All right. There's too many semantics to get caught on this, and now I lost my place.
I know.
And this is all your fault.
And don't forget, folks, this is a long story.
I know, and you're making it longer by being like, so how long has he been at this apartment?
All right, he dropped Carl off at the bus. Wait, no, he meets Graham Norton.
No, Graham.
Allen.
Yeah. Graham Allen. Well, he's trying to hail his taxi, and he's like, hey, why don't you come over to my house and we'll have a bite to eat?
Not a good idea.
And later, Nelson said that he couldn't remember when he strangled Graham, but he remembers coming up to him while Graham was eating an omelet with the intent to kill.
So, I'm gonna guess morning?
So, I was like, I guess you can't make an omelet without breaking some eggs.
Without breaking some Graham. Without breaking Graham's neck. I'm gonna guess the morning because it's an omelet?
I don't know.
I don't know. British people eat steak and eggs in the morning.
You could have been making an omelet at night. It's like...
Ooh, a late night omelet is good.
A breakfast for dinner situation?
You throw in whatever was in dinner. Like, you throw in some,
So he left Graham in the bathtub of his apartment for 3 days.
Dead?
Yeah.
Aww.
Before finally dissecting the body on his kitchen floor. Yeah. Because that's what he does. He cuts up the bodies to like get rid of them and hide them in his wardrobe. And
dissecting?
Yes. He dissects the body, boils the skin off of the bones, and then like hides them in like his cupboard and his like under his sink and all that shit.
I don't like this guy.
I know, I don't either. He's horrible. Anyway, so the next day after he did this dissection thing, he was like, I'm gonna call in sick to work. This was really stressful for me. So
had a busy
night. On October 9th, 1982, he called in sick to work so he could finish, you know, taking care of Graham. Getting all cleaned up and stuff like that. So then, his last victim he killed on January 26th, 1983.
Ooh. So it's almost my birthday.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, cut to then, he meets Stephen Sinclair.
This is his last victim?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I know.
We're almost done.
Okay. Stephen was 20 years old, and some of his acquaintances actually noted they last saw him walking with Dennis to the tube station.
And now, for you guys who don't know, the tube is what they call...
The subway.
The subway.
And not the place where you get sandwiches.
And not the place you get sandwiches. Not the TV, which is also called the tube.
You could call it the tube.
Here we call it the tube.
Anyway. Moving on! So, yeah. La-di-da-di-da. Dennis invites him back to his apartment.
One thing leads to another.
And Stephen.
He's strangled in the bathtub.
Who's,
let me guess. He's strangled in the bathtub.
Can you just let me finish? I'm speaking.
Perfect.
I'm speaking. In the words of Kamala Harris, I'm speaking.
Go on. Sorry, Miss Mrs. Fieger. Go on.
At Dennis's apartment, Stephen is like already on a ton of drugs and alcohol, and he passes out in Dennis's armchair. And Dennis was for some reason listening to Tommy the Rock Opera on a pair of headphones, I think.
Nice. Nice. Good taste.
Anyway.
The West End version, I'd imagine.
Yeah, so he came up beside Stephen and knelt down beside him and said, "Oh, Stephen, here I go again," and strangled him with a ligature made of from a rope and a necktie.
Homemade.
Then Dennis gave Stephen's body a bath and brought him to bed, you know?
That's what I said. Called it.
He covered Stephen's body in talcum powder and positioned three mirrors around the bed. Dennis took off all his clothes and lay down next to Stephen's body. He lay with him there for several hours before turning Stephen's head towards him and kissing him on the forehead and saying, "Good night, Stephen."
How do they know all this?
And then he fell asleep, because he confessed all this.
Ugh.
Then he fell asleep. And then in the morning, he dissected Stephen's body and wrapped the pieces in plastic bags and hid the body parts in the wardrobe, tea chest, or in a drawer beneath the bathtub. So that's where he hides his victims now. It's either the wardrobe, where he keeps, I guess, his clothes, and then or the tea chest in the living room, or underneath. There's a drawer underneath the bathtub. I don't think clothes fit in there with all this
dead body.
I don't know why there's a drawer underneath the bathtub.
And there's literally skeletons in his closets. Like,
literally, yeah. Anyway. Also, at the time that Stephen was killed, he was had bandages wrapped around his wrists because he had recently tried to kill himself. So Dennis took off the bandages and used them to tie up the plastic bags with Stephen's body parts in them. After this happened, this is when he tries to dispose of all his victims because, like, obviously the wardrobe, tea chest, and the drawer beneath the bathtub are getting a little bit full. So he just tries to dispose.
And he's got to change the summer bodies over to the winter bodies. No, winter bodies over. No, yeah, it's October, right?
Now it's January.
Oh, so he's got to really change over to summer bodies. I got you. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so he tried to dispose of his last three victims, John, Graham, and Stephen. And he did his usual thing, boil their heads
John,
and hands.
John, Graham, and Stephen.
He boils their heads and hands in order to get the skin off. Then took the flesh, smaller bones, and organs, and flushed them down the toilet. Drano won't fix that. Which, of course, obviously clogged his toilet.
You're not supposed to do that to the pipe. The pipes aren't big enough.
Yeah. But he figured, oh, I don't have a place to burn the bodies, I'll just flush them down the toilet. Which is the dumbest idea.
A lot of people think that you can flush things down the toilet. Toilet paper and shit. That's all I'd put in the toilet.
Okay, so,
some
yeah.
bugs, okay.
So, duh, he clogged his toilet. And on February 4th, 1983, he wrote a letter of complaint that the drains at Cranley Gardens were blocked and the situation for him and his neighbors was intolerable. Even though he's the one that caused the drains to be blocked in the first place.
Causing a problem and then blaming it on your...
Other people.
Where have we seen that before?
Yeah, I think this is one of those things where it's like...
Narcissist.
You know. Where it's like, I did something wrong and I want everyone to know about it secretly.
And it's all your fault.
Okay. I was like, maybe don't flush body parts in the toilet.
I feel bad for the plumber who has to come in. Hey, you got a lot of hair, your edit's attached to it!
Yeah, so the next day after he wrote this like letter of complaint, or like, I guess, no, this is not the next, the next day after he killed, he's like, dissecting Stephen's body on the kitchen floor, he had a friend come over, acquaintance of his, and he wouldn't let him in the apartment because he was like,
oh, you can't come in.
You can't come in. My place is a mess because I'm dissecting a body on the floor.
Bloody can't come in. I mean, it's bloody in here. You can't come in. I mean,
basically. All right. So, on February 8th, 1983, Michael Catran, a Dino Rod employee.
The Chris Kattan of Britain.
Catran.
I know, but he's the Chris Kattan.
No. Is Chris Kattan a plumber? I don't think so.
But Michael Catran. Yeah.
Michael Catran, a Dino Rod employee.
Dino Rod.
I guess it's a... Like a road
Dino Rod.
Can you stop? I guess it's like a Roto-Rooter or something.
The British Roto-Rooter.
It's the British Roto-Rooter. So he comes to Friendly Gardens to address the plumbing problems that Dennis and his fellow tenants were complaining about.
Yeah, so your problem here is this hair in the head.
And so Mikey runs to the back, opens up a drain cover at the side of the apartment, and finds a flesh-like substance and small bones of unknown origin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you do.
In the drain. He goes, yeah, alright, so found your problem. Someone's been flushing body parts down the toilets. That'll be, 1850.
So Mikey calls up his supervisor, Gary Wheeler.
Gary! Hey, Gary!
Gary! There seems to be some bones in the pipes.
Gary, it looks like I got a job for you.
And since Michael...
You do this one.
Okay, well, since Michael got there to the apartment to, like, check this out at, like, dusk, he and Gary were like, we can let this sit until tomorrow morning. We don't need to get into it right now because it's dark, getting dark out.
Even though the situation is intolerable for...
Yeah. He's like, no, it's fine.
Yeah, make no bones about it. There's a problem there.
Before Michael leaves, Dennis comes out, and Denny and one of his other tenants from the building come out and chat Mikey up about what was called in the blockage.
You went southern with it. Is it southern?
No, I don't know what I did there.
And the blockage is people.
Yeah. So he's like, oh yeah, we found small bones and like a fleshy substance. And then Dennis is like,
oh my god, look at what I've seen rats getting into this stuff.
No.
Oh.
He doesn't say that. He says, it looks to me like someone has been flushing down their Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's not on the menu at KFC.
They have KFCs?
I don't know. I guess
so. You know, the secret ingredient is human flesh. So,
So, yeah.
It's in the sauce.
The next
finger
morning.
Finger licking good. You know what I mean? It's finger flushing good.
No. So the next morning at 7:30 a.m., Mikey and Gary come back to Cranley Gardens to continue the investigation of the fleshy, bony blockage. But they
taste it. Oh, you know what? It is KFC.
No. But the problem is when they get back and they go to where Mikey uncovered the drain cover, all of the debris has been cleared.
They taste it. Mikey likes it.
Have you been listening to anything I've been saying?
I know they're not eating it. The debris's been cleared guess who came in and cleared it?
Yeah, which is, they were like, that's Dennis weird. Nielsen. That's super weird. So they were like,
someone beat us to the job. You're still going to pay us that. We drove all the way out of here.
No. They were like, all right, fine. We're going to keep looking in the pipes, like, further up. So they kept looking through the pipes, and they found some scraps of flesh along with four bones in one of the pipes leading up to, you guessed it, Dennis Nilsson's apartment on the top floor.
Hey, isn't that the apartment of the guy who chatted me up yesterday? The day before? Hello, are you the killer?
Nope.
And they solved the mystery?
So both Mikey and Gary agreed that these bones look like they came from a human hand, and I don't think that was on the menu at KFC in 1983. But I don't know. I've never been
but
to a British KFC.
Finger licking.
I've never been to a British KFC, so I don't know.
That's much more civilized.
I figured they would just have like fish and chips. Then that wouldn't be Kentucky Fried.
Yeah, they have fish and chips. Except you can't order a pound bucket because it gets confusing.
Okay. Anyway, so they were like, they decided to wash their hands of this situation and called the police because they're like, this doesn't have anything to do with me.
Literally washed their hands.
So police come in and they further reveal more small bones and what looked like a human or animal flesh in the same pipe. So they like investigate and go in more further into the pipes. They took all of the remains as evidence to the mortuary at Hornsey where Professor David Bowen.
David Bowie?
Bowen.
That gets around.
David Bowen positively ID'd the remains as human. He also concluded one of the flesh pieces was from a human neck, and it still bore a ligature mark. So, like, one of the pieces was, like, from
a neck. The neck, and it still had a strangulation mark?
Yeah.
Oof. And you know what? That's what you get when you put David Bowie on the case.
Yeah, sure. My God. So the police found out that the top flat belongs to none other than Dennis Nielsen and Detective Chief Inspector Peter J. That's a very long title. And his
Detective Chief Inspector.
Yes, Peter J.
Peter J.
And his colleagues waited outside Dennis's apartment building for Denny to come home from work. So he gets back from work, and the cops come out, and they're like, okay, we're the police. We're here to talk to you about the strange remains that were found in your drain pipes. And he was like, why would the police be investigating that? Isn't it my own business what I put in my drains? And they're like...
Yeah, but not yeah, when it's people.
It was people. And he's like, what are you guys, like health inspectors or something? And...
No, you called us.
No, I'd like to take a look inside your flat, mate. And then so they go upstairs to Dennis's apartment. And once they get inside, they were hit with the overwhelming aroma of...
Dead people.
Rotting flesh!
You called us, remember?
I don't think candles come in that scent.
No, that is a... actually, you will find that a Yankee candle.
Nowadays, for a spooky season.
The British version of Yankee candle. The one here operates the same
isn't
way.
Isn't that...
over there, it means
Yankee. Molten Brown? No, that's a British company.
Yeah, so melting body.
Molten brown.
Right, molten body.
Anyway, so the police are questioning him up in his apartment, and they're like, we found human remains in your drain. And he was like, good grief, how awful. And Jay's like...
Somebody must have stuffed them up the pipes.
Jay's like, okay, don't mess about. Where's the rest of the body? And Nelson is like, okay, fine. It's in two plastic bags in his wardrobe. Which, big surprise, that's where the odor rotting flesh scent was coming from.
Dude, your body and the thing farted and...
yeah, so, it's coming from the cupboard. They decided not to open it because they were like, ew, this shit smells.
Something's in there.
I'm like, well, let it go.
They arrested Nielsen though, right?
Well, they decided not to open it and...
Don't let him leave, you can't let him out of your sight.
I know, can you let me... Okay... They started not to open it. And they were like, are you keeping any other secret body parts anywhere? And Dennis was like, it's a long story.
I cannot tell a lie. Yes, I am.
And I was like, yes, we got that.
Oh, it's a long story? Yeah, we know.
We know. And then he told the police he would confess everything, but not at his apartment. So they went down to the station.
We know, we're nearly an hour into the we're nearly 2 hours into the recap.
Anyway, so the police said, okay, we're going to arrest you on suspicion of murder, and they took him to Hornsey Police Station.
Hornsey?
The police asked if the remains in Dennis's flat were from one or two victims, and
he
said...
Like, oh no, four or five?
Yeah, he said, there were about 15 or 16 since 1978.
This guy's been, and that's the sign of a guy who's been waiting to tell someone about this. Is this from one or two? Oh no, there's been 14 or 15. Since...
Well, to be fair, Dennis was very reclusive and didn't have a lot of friends.
Oh no, I've killed lots. 14 or 15. Not all here, of course. Moved in here. This place is new. Moved in here.
This is what happens when you don't have anyone to talk to, apartment. Apparently.
What'd you say?
This is what happens when you don't have anyone to talk to, apparently. You start killing people and using him as your...
Imagine and then when friends. The police pick you up, you spill the beans immediately.
Okay, so that evening, Detective Superintendent Chambers, DCIJ, and Professor Bowen went back to Cranley Gardens and removed the plastic bags.
Chambers and Bowen.
Sure.
My favorite British TV show.
From the war, so they came back, took the plastic bags out of the wardrobe, and took them to the mortuary. In one bag, they found two dissected torsos and a shopping bag of internal organs.
Hmm.
Then the second bag, there was a human skull.
I don't like any of
them. With most of the flesh coming off of it.
I'm only joking because I hate this.
A severed head and a torso with arms attached but no hands. You know. Like, you know, typical stuff you find in a man's closet. So.
I don't like.
I know. It's almost done, though. Mm-hmm. So they interview Dennis on February 10th, 1983, and he confessed there were more remains in his apartment than the ones in the wardrobe. He's like, I also have them in my tea chest in the living room, as well as an upturned drawer in the bathroom.
And a little teacup in the dining room table that's supposed to be for sugar.
Probably. So he admits the body parts belong to three men, all killed by Dennis strangling them, usually with a necktie. One of the victims, Dennis couldn't remember the name of. One he referred to as John the Guardsman. And the last victim, Dennis ID'd as Stephen Sinclair. Dennis also admitted to killing 12 to 13 men at his old apartment beginning in December 1978. And unsuccessfully attempting to kill seven other people who had either escaped or had been revived and allowed to leave. Yeah.
I do like, though, how if he doesn't successfully do it, he tends to let him go.
Not always, because with John, he took him, like, five times to kill John, and he didn't let him go.
So you're right. I don't like any of it.
It's not okay. Anyway, so the police go back to Cranley Gardens. They search some more, find the lower section of the torso and two legs in the bathroom, a skull and part of a torso, and several bones in the tea chest. Dennis also showed police to his old apartment on Melrose Avenue, where he burned his victim's remains.
You think he's constantly walking through his apartment spraying air freshener, or does he not care about the smell?
I think he mentions later when he dissects the bodies that it made him throw up, but and he had to, like, scrape maggots out of them and stuff like that with salt, which is gross. I didn't write that in here, but
we're saying it anyway.
Anyway,
you're not eating.
Around this exact same time, good old Mikey Catran, Drano guy,
Mike Catran,
Dino Rod. Contacted the Daily Mirror and told them about the search for human remains at Cranley Gardens, and on February 11th, the newspaper published a front-page story complete with photos provided by Dennis's own mother in Aberdeenshire. So it's like, oh, honey, you're in the paper. She's like, this is him when he was a baby. This is him in the army. This is him as a policeman.
I think I still have a photo of the boy. She goes over. Yeah, here he is.
Anyway, so according to English law, the police had to charge or release Dennis within 48 hours. So Professor Bowen assembled the victim's remains on the floor of the mortuary and positively matched Dennis's fingerprints to those found on his last victim, Stephen Sinclair. So at 5:40 p.m. on February 11th, Dennis is charged with Sinclair's murder. And they released a statement saying so to the press.
But the other murders, too.
Well, yeah, but that was the only one they could prove at the time. At this point, they began formal questioning, whereas before they were just kind of, like, casually chatting, I guess. I don't know. So
you did it, didn't you?
So at this point, Dennis is like, I need a lawyer, because he didn't ask for one before, but now he's like, for some reason, I need
a lawyer. Plead the fifth, though. He's been confessing left and right.
He's confessed most all of it. Pretty much. So the police interviewed him 16 times in the next few days.
A little too late for a lawyer.
The police interviewed him 16 times in the next 2 or 3 days, and then for over 30 hours.
So you got a total.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know.
Not if like, was at like a time.
I don't think in a row. So Dennis insisted he wasn't sure why he killed his victims. He said, I'm helping, you will tell me that. And I was like, what?
So he does all the dirty deeds in this and then asks other people to do the work for him.
I don't know. He's like, they asked him why he told me you're the expert.
I don't know. You're the shrink.
So, and he also said he didn't plan on killing anyone until, like, immediately before he decided to do it.
So it was an impulse kill, yeah.
Yeah, he said it wasn't premeditated, which I'm kind of like, that's bullshit.
He's inviting people up to his apartment.
Yeah, he's inviting all these guys up to his apartment.
And there's a pattern. Like,
what's
what do
the point of you inviting this guy up to your apartment? You don't have sex with him.
Gonna end up strangled in the bathtub. Yeah. What do you think's gonna happen?
Yeah.
The last five guys were strangled in the bathtub.
Yeah, you just keep repeating the same behavior, expecting a different result.
Definition.
Of insanity. Anyway. So he says he killed most of them by strangulation and then washed the body and shaved the victim's chest. Then he would apply makeup to cover any blemishes, because that's how he liked it.
Hmm.
Then he would dress the body in socks and underpants and drape it on top of himself while he talked to it. A lot of the time he would masturbate while he stood alongside the body or knelt above it, although he also admitted to humping the body between the thighs. He never actually penetrated any of his victims because they were, quote, too perfect and beautiful for the pathetic ritual of commonplace sex. Great. Yeah, he had a really warped view of sexuality. He's got a warped
sexuality.
It does. It's very bad.
I don't want to judge, but in this case...
It's super warped. I know. It's not
This
not
very, could use some judgment.
He doesn't have a...
He is not Norma Kilvio.
Yeah, it's bad.
I've heard of bondage. And I've heard of foreplay. But don't kill people.
Anyway.
And then do all that. It doesn't really work the same.
So, while
consent.
He was...
sent.
After he would, like, kill the victim and he was about to, like, wash them, he would destroy all the victim's belongings so they could obliterate their identity. Because now they were, to him, what he called a prop.
And then, but then it led to him not even knowing who they were.
He called them a prop in his fantasies. Kind of like his own hard, cold, dead version of a blow-up doll, I guess.
Hmm.
Or a mannequin or something. And so he would,
a real doll.
He would pose the body and talk to it and occasionally even get emotional over how beautiful his victims' bodies were. Hmm. So he would keep bodies as long as he possibly could in his old apartment because he could keep them under the floorboards, and then he'd like bring them back out and then put makeup back on them and dress them in the socks and underwear and do the whole thing over again.
Mm.
But he couldn't do that in his new apartment because obviously you would notice that there was a dead body lying around in one of your chairs. So he
Morning, Steven.
He cut them up like sooner than he would in his last place. He explained the process of getting rid of the remains in which he would boil the heads in a big cooking pot on the stove so the internal contents would evaporate, making them easier to dispose of. And then he would dissect the torso and limbs, wrap them in plastic bags, and store them in one of his three hiding places before flushing them down the toilet.
His neighbors are like, yeah, the guy makes a lot of bone broth. I don't know, I don't know what's up with them.
In his old apartment, he would just leave them under the floorboards, as I said, but, yeah, he didn't do that in the new place. And before he, got rid of the bodies, he would masturbate over them to say goodbye. Which I'm like, sure, okay. That's a great send-off. They asked Nilsson if he had any remorse for any of the crimes he committed, and he said, I wish I could stop, but I couldn't. I had no other thrill or happiness. I was like, get a hobby, dude. Knitting.
He has
reading.
He has a...
Parcheesi? I don't know. Join a book club?
I think a single thing.
Join a book club.
Now, you know, now is the time when we're all stuck in our houses. So he's, you know, puzzles.
Exactly.
They had puzzles in 1980, right?
He also said he didn't like the act of killing itself, but he worshipped the art and act of death. That's a direct quote.
Well, that's all I need to know to stay away from this guy.
Well, he's dead now.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. You'll find that out later. So, yeah. He was formally charged on February 11th and transferred to HMP Brixton to await trial.
HMP?
Yeah, and he said he was resigned and relieved awaiting his trial because he thought he would be seen as innocent until proven guilty.
No, I mean, this guy's pretty guilty.
I know, I don't know where he got that delusional idea.
It'd be tough to prove him innocent.
Proved innocent. I was like, you confessed to a lot of bad things.
He'd have a harder time without a lawyer, first of all.
So, like, he was on remand in Brixton.
You never talk about a lawyer.
So they wouldn't let him, like, go on bail, obviously, because he's crazy and dangerous.
Please, lock him up. I don't... Lock him. I don't ever want
to
see him.
And he would refuse to wear the prison uniform because he was like, this is against my remand conditions. So, and then he was like, I'm just not going to wear clothes at all. And so they wouldn't let him leave his cell because he was like, I'm just not going to do
this. Because he's naked.
Because he's like, I'm not putting on clothes.
Because he's naked.
On August 1st, he threw poop on several of the prison officers and was found guilty of assaulting an officer and spent 56 days in solitary.
wanted to get out for good behavior now is not that.
Okay, so yeah.
He will not be leaving for good behavior.
So, on May 26, 1983, Nelson was committed to stand trial at the Old Bailey on 5 counts of murder.
Ah, the Old Bailey.
2 counts of attempted murder. During his committal, he was represented by solicitor Ronald Moss.
Don Moss, now.
And so, he, like, back and he went back and forth with this guy a lot. It was kind of like this situation where, like, Ted Bundy was like, I'm gonna fire all my lawyers and represent myself.
Except I'm gonna be represented by Ron Moss.
Because he kept doing that. He dismissed Moss a month before, and then, like, so, and he dismissed Moss in April, and then the court date was set for May 26th. And then he brought him back shortly afterwards because he's like, I have no adequate facilities to mount my own defense. So then Moss represented him until July of 83. And then Dennis fired him again so he could represent himself, but then brought Moss back again on August 5th. So, I don't know. He's very indecisive. Initially...
He seems like he knows what he wants in some respects. And not other.
Yeah, well, initially Dennis was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna plead guilty to all the counts of murder. And Moss was like, cool, I'm gonna prepare a case based on that.
You know, he had to keep moving, I think.
What?
I'm trying to make a Rolling Stone gathers no moss joke.
I don't think it worked.
Alright, fair enough. Moss grows all right, on
well,
the
anyway, Moss is gonna get away from Dennis anyway, so... In July, he represented him until July, and then he fired him again, and then brought him back in August, and then he said he was going to plead guilty, and Moss was like, cool, that's what I'm gonna, you know, arrange my defense based on that. And then, like, right before the trial, it was like 5 weeks before the actual trial date, he dismissed Moss for a third time and decided to be represented by Ralph Heems, who told Dennis to plead not guilty by way of insanity, or as the English call it, diminished responsibility.
Whereas, no, it'd be something more fun if the English called it something. It'd be like, lollygagging, or,
No, it's called diminished responsibility. I looked it up.
Psychological floofing, or...
It's called diminished responsibility. It's not psychological floofing.
I don't know.
Ugh. Anyway.
I'm not British.
Okay. So his trial begins on October 24th, 1983. He was charged with 6 counts of murder and 2 of attempted murder. There was obviously no doubt that Dennis had committed any of these murders, because he confessed to all of them. So the main focus of the trial was to determine what his mental state was at the time of the killings. Like, was he...
Bam.
Was he, like, doing it premeditated and he knew what he was doing, or was he crazy and, like, just being, like, at... the whim of his insanity.
I don't think he was crazy. I think...
Well, that's what the trial is, you know,
discover. I think it's... I mean, I'm not on the trial. I'm not going to get a chance to, but I think it's premeditated.
Well, that's what the prosecution, Alan Green, QC, argued that the murders...
A Jewish lawyer.
I don't know. He's no. British. Yeah, barrister? Solicitor?
Brits can be Jews, too.
I'm not saying they can't.
Alan Green? Go ahead.
He argued that the murders were premeditated, while the defense said that Dennis's mental state was so impaired that his ability to tell from right from wrong was, like, completely out the window, and that they should just be charged as manslaughters instead of murders.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know.
So he'll still go to jail. It's just, it gets the charge degraded down from
manslaughter, you wouldn't go to jail as long.
But I want this man in jail. So,
Alright, well, hold on. Alright. So, the prosecution opens their case. They describe how the police discovered the human remains in Dennis's pipes in February, how Dennis, like, provided a very detailed confession.
Yeah, he did it.
And led the investigators to his former residence, who was like, I burned a bunch of bodies here.
It didn't even take it. You know, like, you get these false confessions from people because they're being pressured in a situation. This guy... He just gave the information away. Like, I wrote it down over there in that book. The book, read it.
He's like, I've been wanting to get this off my chest for a really long time. I think he actually said that at one point.
Yeah, it's not like...
He's like, I'll tell you everything. I just don't want to be in my apartment when I do it.
They're not trying to prove that he did. Like, he did it. No one's trying to prove
that he did it. They're not trying to prove he did it. They're just trying to prove what his state of mind was when he was doing it.
Semantic.
And then Green ended his opening argument with that when questioned about whether or not he needed to kill, Dennis replied, quote, at the precise moment of the act, in parentheses, of murder, comma, I believe I am right in doing the act. End quote. So, yeah. That's pretty damning.
Good lawyer would be like, shut up, Dennis.
One of his, like, first, I guess, victims that survived the
ordeal. Yeah, go ahead.
Douglas Stewart testifies, and he says that
Dougie.
He said he fell asleep in a chair at Dennis's apartment.
Okay, go on.
And when he woke up, his ankles were tied to the chair, and Dennis was strangling him with a tie.
A fun Friday night.
Douglas then managed to overpower Dennis, and then Dennis shouted at him, take my money.
Money?
And the prosecution stated that this was Dennis's attempt to alert the neighbors and, like, try and get people to think that he was being robbed or something.
Right.
So it would seem like a robbery gone wrong.
Right.
So Dennis let Douglas go, and Douglas went to the police and reported the incident. But he
wanted to make it look like Douglas let Dennis go.
Yeah, so he goes to the police and he's like, yo, this guy tried to kill me. And then they went and interviewed Dennis about it, and he had a completely different story than Douglas did, so they were like, oh, it's probably just like a lover's quarrel or something.
They've all technically been lover's quarrels, just very one-sided.
Yeah. So then the defense is like trying to undermine Douglas's credibility by being like, you were drunk, so how do you know this really happened? And you sold the story to the press.
He's like, my neck.
You're not just doing this for money or whatever.
Dennis offered you the money. Why didn't you take it? Get the fuck out of here. And there's some more.
So October 25th, two other would-be victims of Dennis testified. Paul Nobbs, the university student that Dennis picked Nobbers. Up and took back to his flat for alcohol and sex.
Paul wakes up in the middle of the night.
He woke up in the early morning hours with a terrible headache. He goes to the bathroom to wash his face.
That's the hangover. That's the movie, The Hangover.
And he goes to wash his face, and he sees his eyes are all bloodshot, and his face was very red, and then Dennis comes in and is like, God, you look bloody awful! You should see a doctor!
Oh, that's not The Hangover.
And Paul never reported this to the police because he was afraid of exposing himself as being gay. He didn't want that to be let out. Carl Stodder, the other guy that Dennis almost killed, the one with the bath and the so like the one where he's like, I'm gonna drown you and resuscitate you and my dog licks your face and like, you know, that whole thing. He testified in May 1982, Dennis strangled him and then tried to drown him before he brought him back to life and tried to explain to him that it was the whole like thing that he was like getting suffocated in a sleeping bag. And Carl was like really upset during the whole testimony. They had to like stop and, you know, give him a moment to compose himself and things like that. It was very traumatic for him. Then DCIJ testified that Dennis's demeanor was when he was confessing, and like he was like, he was really calm and like matter of fact, like kind of just like, oh yeah, I killed a bunch of people. He's like, it was really strange that someone who had committed these terrible crimes would be willing to give up all the incriminating evidence.
Yeah, Dennis
right away.
Dennis is an idiot. Just giving away the information.
So, and then D.S. Chambers gave a graphic testimony detailing what Dennis had done to the victims with their bodies and how he disposed of them. And Dennis, during this entire thing, just looks completely indifferent, like, la-di-da. And some of the jury were, like, shocked, and the rest of the jury was like, nah, this can't be happening right now.
Even, you know, the jury's confused. They're like, is he...
Yeah, they thought, it's like, is he faking it? Is he just not done it? He doesn't seem to care that he's describing a bunch of disgusting stuff. So, and then the defense got two psychiatrists to testify for them. On October 26th, James McKeith stated that Dennis's lack of emotional development gave him difficulty experiencing other emotions besides anger, and his tendency to think of human beings as props for his fantasies were what caused him to do these horrible things. And he said that it was probably due to a...
Yeah, you can't say all, but I'm going to say most people don't think of other people as props.
He probably did all this because he had some unspecified personality disorder. And the prosecution was like, yeah, okay, can you make that any more vague?
They can make it more vague by saying unspecified. Can you make unspecified?
More vague.
More vague? Hmm.
So the other psychiatrist takes the stand next. And he, his name is Patrick Galway, and he said that Dennis had...
Now, quote, that's the most British
borderline
name.
False self, as if pseudo-normal narcissistic personality disorder, end quote, with occasional outbreaks of schizoid disturbances. And that's what caused Dennis to murder his victims.
Ain't psych fun.
And the prosecution was like, okay, but did he know what he was doing when he was doing it? And the doctor was like, yeah, but he didn't appreciate it as a criminal act, so it doesn't count.
Meh.
He didn't really say that, but that's basically the gist of what happened.
Didn't appreciate
it. He didn't think of it as a criminal act, I guess, so that means it's okay.
That means it's okay, but it's not okay.
Yeah.
It is a criminal act.
It's terrible. So then...
What are these
one person... Professor Bowden was like, step aside, bitches, and on Halloween, October 31st, the prosecution calls Professor Bowden to rebut the psychiatrist's testimony.
He said, step aside, bitches?
No, I didn't say that. I added that in.
Oh, that's you. That's a youism.
That's me adding in some flair.
That's you flaring the story.
Yeah, that didn't happen, obviously.
You know what a 2.5-hour story needs?
This is not historically accurate, and I never claimed it was. Anyway. So Bowden comes in, he's like, yo, Dennis is abnormal and weird, we get that, but he's manipulative, but he can form relationships, and he just chooses instead to objectify people, so he did all this with a perfectly clear head.
That's what I said.
So, on November
3rd. I'm with Bowen.
Is that November a shirt? On November 3rd, the jury deliberated and came back with a majority vote of guilty for Dennis's 6 counts of murder and 2 attempted murders.
Nilsson was... Arrow, I'm with him.
Sure. Dennis started, Dennis was sentenced to life in prison with a recommendation that he serve a minimum of 25 years. So I guess that...
So 25 to life.
So basically 25
years. 25 to life. That's a song, isn't it?
I don't know. So...
But of course we know the good behavior goes out the window, like the poopy throw. Just like the poopy threw good behavior out the window.
So he started his sentence at HMP Wormwood Scrubs.
Fine, that's the most British name that we've come across now. HMP Wormwood Scrubs.
He was a Category A prisoner. He had his own cell, but he could still socialize with other inmates.
And that was good, because he's an A-type personality, so...
So on December 1983, fellow inmate Albert Moffat actually cut Dennis across the face and chest with a razor blade. So then Dennis was transferred to a different facility, he stated.
He's probably annoying the other guy.
HMP Parkhurst, and then he was transferred to HMP Wakefield, and then HMP Full Sutton, and then HMP Whitmore.
Then, but it's where they got that rhyme from.
What?
That children's rhyme. Yeah, little Mr. Moffat sat in his cell, slicing his cellmates with razors.
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
I don't know what you're talking about. So in,
along came Nilsson, sat down, was still
just,
him.
You're just making no sense.
Oh, sorry.
All right, so in September 1992, Central Television did an interview with Nilsson as part of the program Viewpoint 1993 Murder in Mind, and it focused on offender profiling. In December of 94, Home Secretary, 25-year term with a whole life tariff.
Good.
Which ensured Dennis would never be released from prison.
A life
tariff. And then...
good.
He got transferred back to HMP Full Sutton in 2003.
He got transferred back there? Full Sutton.
Well, Full Sutton was actually a vulnerable prisoner-like... prison.
Full Sutton, full stop. Okay.
It was for, vulnerable prisoners that were, they were afraid that something would happen to them. So I guess
I'm not afraid.
He wasn't super popular.
I want something to happen.
He was always complaining that he was being treated unfairly and complaining to the government.
No, he treated people unfairly.
And then he's like, the guards want to beat me up and shit, and he was upset that the gay softcore porn magazines he was subscribed to had content removed from them before he got them, so he was like, this is, my rights are being taken away.
What?
I'm like, I don't understand why they're giving him gay softcore porn to begin with.
This is prison, baby. The only gay softcore porn is Larry in the next cell, alright?
So...
this is
also
prison.
During his incarceration, he wrote an unpublished 400-page autobiography called The History of a Drowning Boy. The autobiography...
that might be my favorite thing he's ever done, though. Can we read that?
Well, the autobiography apparently remains with one of his prison pen pals. So there was a lot of people that contacted him and wrote letters to him while he was in prison. And
he sent it?
He gave it to that. One of the
prison pen pal, like a guy in prison?
No, like a pen pal, like, you know how
it's outside of prison.
You know how like desperate women like
I'll buy it. How much?
Desperate women kind of like write to like prison inmates and they're like, I don't believe you did this.
I saw the ABC show Desperate Women. I saw it.
So that's, it was probably some woman or man or whatever that was like,
well,
I love you, Dennis.
Well, I want it. So for Christmas,
Christmas
coming
up. He's gay, but you know,
Christmas coming up, I want that 400-page novella.
Probably not going to find it. It was not published. So on May 10th, 2018, Dennis.
Whoa.
Fast
that's
forward.
Near.
Yep. May 10th, 2018, Dennis was taken from HMP Full Sutton to York Hospital, complaining that he had severe stomach pain.
That was the before times.
And he had, turns out he had a ruptured abdominal aortic system.
Oh no.
And they repaired it, but then he developed a blood clot from the surgery, and he died on May 12th.
Oh.
According to his autopsy, the cause was a pulmonary embolism and the retroperitoneal hemorrhage. Retroperitoneal hemorrhage.
He died. Hell gained another one.
He did. He just did.
Hell has a new member.
Yep. And I also found out that recently there is a biopic about him that...
based on that 400-page novel? I want it.
I don't know.
Why don't we get to make the biopic? Can't we make the
biopic?
There's
a made-for-TV movie or something.
We've now done two episodes. Why can't we make a biopic?
I don't know. There's a made-for-TV movie that stars David Tennant, and I love him.
So there's going to be... I was going to ask, should we make a movie about this? But you're saying they've made a TV thing.
And David Tennant plays Dennis Nilsen. Yeah.
David Tennant plays Dennis Nilsen?
Yeah.
Ooh.
The man has range.
It's like Grace Point.
Except he's a psycho gay serial killer.
Except it's called Broadchurch.
And in that one, he's actually a good guy. He's a detective. So opposite. Not quite the same. So yeah, that is the story of Dennis Nilsen, the kindly killer, a.k.a. the Muswell Hill murderer. Muswell Hill murderer.
Now, should we rate it? I do want to give it a Nilsen rating, okay? No? Okay.
I think that's a Nilsen rating.
Oh, that's a Nilsen rating, and that will do with the David Tennant.
Sure.
Dennis Tennant show.
Yeah.
All right, so sorry we've been away for a while, but
sorry about that.
We're back now.
I'm really surprised I didn't know about this, like that more people don't talk about. This is like a
serious... this one is not one that you've heard about, but they're making them. I think once they do make a TV show about it, will talk.
I don't know. I do pride myself in listening to a lot of different true crime podcasts, I'm surprised that I haven't heard this story before. It's very strange.
They haven't done it on any ones of the ones you've listened to?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know if it's because, like, sensitive subject.
I don't listen to any.
It's gay men killing each other, which is not generally what
happens. Yeah, but I don't care that it's men killing men. It's a terrible story.
It's a terrible story. Anyway, you slice it. Terrible story.
Anyway, he sliced them. It's a terrible story.
I know. That's sad. Ugh. Ugh.
Ugh. Anyway, watch a TV show, and what else we gonna do?
Yeah, so...
when's that come out?
I think it came out already. I'm pretty sure, but I don't know. It might be on, like, Epics or Stars or something.
Oh, one of those channels no one gets?
No, one of those channels no one gets. Yeah, you know, one of them.
Hilarious.
All right, so that's what we got for you. Sorry
it
took so long.
It's killing them kindly part two.
And it's killing them so kindly.
Huh.
Anyway.
Well, I guess there you got a whole new story to find.
I gotta find a new story. Preferably one that's shirts, a lot shorter.
Those shirts. One, I'm with Bowen. And what's the other one?
I don't know. You.
They're coming out, I promise.
I thought you were writing these down.
For the holidays. We'll probably get one more out by the holiday season.
Hopefully, yeah. I'd like to. I don't know if there's any holiday-themed murder.
Ooh, are there Christmas ones? The Christmas Murders. That's a movie on Lifetime, isn't it?
It probably is. I don't know if there's any true stories about a guy that dresses up like Santa Claus and kills people, though.
Well, you'll find it.
We'll find out. Yeah. We'll find out. If you guys have any suggestions, feel free to let us know.
Well, yeah, email us.
Email us at killerpillowtalk@gmail.com. Or yeah, go on our Facebook page and make a comment and be like, yo, do this one.
Yeah, and if you're on iTunes, you can like, review.
And subscribe.
And subscribe.
That would be awesome. That would be the best Christmas present we could get.
That would be, I mean, literally, if you want to do some good in the world. Like our podcast.
I get nervous.
That would be a fun Christmas present. We wake up Christmas morning. It's Christmas. We run down.
We have more than 2 subscribers.
We have 4 followers. You know.
Yeah, I still only have 10 YouTube channel viewers.
Right, viewer YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah, you want to go on my YouTube channel?
She's sarah.elizabeth.hewitt.
Yeah, look it up. I do things. Anyway, thanks so much, guys. Anything else you want to promote?
No.
I'm also doing a character show on December 10th. This
might not come out by then.
It's definitely coming out by then, because I will make you do it.
Alright, well, if that's coming out by then on the 9th, I have a show.
Okay.
A Zoom show. We're all doing shows electronically.
Zoomy shows!
It's a Christmas bit show.
Great. Christmas bit show.
A Christmas bit.
Yeah, I said that. A Christmas bitch show.
I'm only using dog.
I would watch it.
A Christmas bitch show.
I think that's... Everything should just be shows with dogs. Yeah. Okay. Alright, well. Until next time on Killer Pillow Talk, this is Charlie and Sarah signing off.
Okay.